This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow is producing, and we start with Professor Dane Sherman, speaking as Citizen Sherman. He's at Southeastern Louisiana University. For those unfamiliar with Dane, he's an accomplished writer going back a few decades now. His book, Welcome to the Fallen Paradise, was selected in 2005 as a DearReader.com, a program used by 3,000 libraries, and it was listed in Booklist Magazine's top books of that year. 877-217-5757. I went back a few years, Dane, but I don't usually give you the appropriate plaudits, and you are a man of letters, and as you know, writing is one of the hardest things people do if they do it well, and you do it well, and you speak well. Some writers don't, but Dane Sherman does. Good to have you with us, sir.
Louisiana makes great speakers, Jim, and I'm a native, so we have a great tradition of both writing and speaking.
There you go. Well, there was some speaking in the federal courthouse yesterday here in Baton Rouge, the Russell B. Long Federal Courthouse, and federal judge Shelley Dick rejected a request by legislative leaders to extend a deadline for a new congressional map, singled one out that the Louisiana House has presented. She chided the speaker, Clay Schexnider, for going forward with basically the same congressional makeup that the judge just rejected. What in the world do you think will happen in this case, Dane Sherman?
Well, Clay Schexnider is trying to be a comic genius, but it doesn't seem to be working. Judge Dick has about had enough of it. I wonder if this continues, if Clay Schexnider couldn't spend a couple weeks for contempt in the East Baton Rouge prison general population, if that would not get his attention.
I think that would get most people's attention, but
it would get mine, Jim. Let me tell you, it would definitely. You want to get my attention, send me to general population in the East Baton Rouge Parish Jail, and you will definitely get my attention.
Especially a guy who's a lawmaker who might very well be a magnet for attention, you think? He might be.
But I would think he would stand out. Yes, he would. He would. I think I could blend in a lot better than he could.
I think so, too. 877-217-5757. We're going to cover some ground with Dane Sherman. And I think at the end of the show, we will hear from Paul Braun at WRKF, who also has been covering the goings-on at the Capitol, and now the Capitol goings-on have extended to the courthouse a few blocks away. And Judge Shelley Dick is making some noise, and what she's saying is really accurate. There's no doubt this was a gerrymandered congressional makeup, and it was designed to limit black representation, and primarily because black representation means one more Democrat. So it is a case in which the facts are on the side of the people who want a second majority black district, but the power in the legislature is rested in a majority that likes things the way they are. And to their credit, these lawmakers who are Republicans, they have all these lawmakers like Garrett Graves and Steve Scalise and Clay Higgins, Mike Johnson, Julia Ledlow, they're breathing down their necks. They want to keep things as the way they are, too, because it's working for them, Dane.
It is, and they like it just like it is. They have districts that are so stacked toward Republicans, white Republicans, Republicans in general, that they don't want to mix this up. And the pressure that has to be coming on them from the national level to not give the Democrats another district has got to be incredible. And that's just the political reality of it. Mm-hmm. Because if they do this, that one district could change. It could change. I mean, we don't think that one district could change it, but it could change the face of the U.S. House of Representatives.
Well, right now, according to demographers, there are only 30 competitive U.S. House races left in the country. 30 out of 435. And if Judge Dick gets her way, and she is the federal judge in charge, then there will be one or two in Louisiana, one or two competitive races. So, yeah, it could go either way. And it could be, if there's a slight majority of black citizens in each district, the two majority ones, it could be that Republicans might win them all. There's no guarantee that a Democrat will win. We will see. And the Republicans who drew these maps, they would have a lot better case if the districts were contiguous, but they're not. It is unfathomable that North Baton Rouge is in Troy Carter's district. And what area of the state is hurting more than North Baton Rouge? The last thing that area needs is a congressman from New Orleans representing it.
No, that's not good. Now, there are multiple maps being proposed. I think Barry Ivey has one. I think Rick Ward, who I think he's resigning, but he's still there and going to be a lobbyist. But the one that seems to make the most sense from what I've read is Cleo Fields' map. And I'm going to say this, in education, in certain matters like this, Cleo Fields has done more than almost any representative in the state of Louisiana, Senate or House of Representatives. And in this case, Cleo Fields has provided a map. They need to go on and do these are supposed to be law and order Republicans. They need to follow the law.
Mm-hmm.
And the law is that they need to provide two districts that represent the population of Louisiana fairly. And the judge is right. They're hoping that they get some kind of reprieve from a higher court. But for now, they need to do the right thing.
877-217-5757, and we will cover some ground with Dane Sherman. And, of course, the national stories are now being dominated by what's happening with the 1-6 Commission. Headline, New York Times, Trump pressured Pence and incited a mob against him. Rioters were 40 feet from their target, and that target being the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence. Dane, can we assume that if Donald Trump gets the Republican nomination in 2024, that Mike Pence will not be his running mate?
Yeah, I think he's not getting invited to the Mardi Gras ball or Thanksgiving or any other family gathering at the Trump house, White House or house.
Well, the 1-6 panel wants to hear from the wife of Supreme Court Justice Jenny Thomas. The Associated Press puts it this way. The House committee investigating the insurrection at the Capitol will ask Virginia Thomas, wife of Clarence Thomas, for an interview. Jenny Thomas said she would comply. She is a conservative activist, communicated with people in President Trump's orbit ahead of the attack. And on the day of the insurrection, when hundreds of Trump supporters violently stormed the Capitol, she was briefly present. Mississippi Congressman Benny Thompson, the chair of the panel, says it's time for her to come to talk. She had communication with John Eastman, the Trump lawyer who was trying to forward this lie that the election was stolen. And Justice Thomas has twice voted on cases involving the insurrection and Donald Trump's involvement. He did not recuse himself, and each time he voted with Donald Trump. So it is an interesting scenario, Dane Sherman.
It is, and it doesn't look good for her. She didn't want to have anything to do with the committee until they got the goods on her. Now she wants to come explain away what has happened, and I would not be shocked if somehow really soon Justice Thomas just resigns because he doesn't want people digging into everything that's going on with his wife. I think there's a lot of there. It's not pretty. Eastman is a wackadoodle. And to look at his bio, Jim, he seems like this. He could be a great legal mind, but here he is telling the president to do illegal things, pleading the fifth 500 times before the committee. And before the president left, he's begging for a pardon. I just don't. Mm-hmm. That man is really one. He's like Ali Akbar Alexander. He's one of the great mysteries of the whole January 6th thing.
And of course, Ali Akbar And now Ali Alexander, he spent a lot of time in this studio through the years, started in Louisiana as an aide to Jay Darden, and then became the leader of the Stop the Steal movement, always a Louisiana angle. Justice Thomas was the only member of the U.S. Supreme Court to vote against the court's order allowing the January 6th committee to obtain records from the president that were held by the National Archives and Records Administration. And so it is a case in which Clarence Thomas is apparently doing what his wife wishes, and his wife wanted the election to be overturned despite compelling evidence, convincing evidence, irrefutable evidence that the election was not stolen. It wasn't even a close election. 7 million votes in three states. Give me a break. But Jenny Thomas bought it, and apparently Clarence did too, and he is on the U.S. Supreme Court, one of the most powerful members in the United States government. We'll be back after this timeout with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Dane Sherman, the professor at Southeastern Louisiana University, who opines about politics as Citizen Sherman from the left side of the spectrum. Briefly, David in Atlanta has been waiting. David, you're on with Dane. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. You know, to talk about Trump's total lack of decency, he told his vice president that essentially, if you don't violate the law and violate the Constitution, we can't be friends any longer. Well, when a friend wants you to violate the law, that's not much of a friendship. That person's not a friend. He's an enemy.
Well, and he also called his vice president a wimp, and he used the P word. He was trying to intimidate Mike Pence, and Pence did not take the bait, Dane Sherman.
No, he didn't, and here he is. He comes out as American hero as a result. And people have asked, the commentators left and right on television have said, well, why didn't he, you know, start squealing prior to the day of the of, you know, January 6th? And I think Pence feared that Trump was so unhinged and so angry and violent that that I think Pence was scared for his physical safety. I really believe that. And I think that's one reason why he gave Trump no clear indication that he was going to follow through, that he was not going to follow through. I think that Pence was calculated that it could be dangerous. And I think that's why he was quiet until the very end.
One angry mob with baseball bats and pepper spray chanting "Hang Mike Pence" came within 40 feet of the vice president. His Secret Service detail had to hustle him to safety and hold him for nearly 5 hours in the bowels of the Capitol. President Trump called Pence a wimp, and worse, and of course, an abusive call in the Oval Office. Mr. Trump's daughter and former White House aides have testified to this, so they were there. They heard it, and Donald Trump bloviated and didn't get his way and didn't like it. Now, we're going to, of course, follow the 1-6 commission wherever it goes. But before we part company with Dane Sherman, we had Bob Mann on this show not so long ago, and he's upset about what he believes is not the protection of tenure by the new LSU president, Bill Tate, and also Jim Henderson, who is head of the Louisiana system. What have they not done to ease the concerns of Professor Mann and perhaps for Professor Sherman, Dane?
Well, what you're referring to is a resolution that went through the legislature, flew through the legislature with no real resistance from either men mentioned to any real respect, and that is to quote-unquote study tenure. And what it really is, it's Stuart Cathy, North Louisiana senator's fishing expedition, to get rid of tenure in Louisiana. That's what it is. It's about getting rid of tenure in Louisiana. And rather than coming and fighting for it and fighting against it, they rolled over and you see what you get. Now, what people need to understand, number one, and I don't know why Stuart Cathy hates Bob Mann, but he does. Bob Mann is one of the most prolific, one of the most celebrated professors in Louisiana in any field. His publication record is staggering. His students love him, and
I've been to one of his programs. It was, I paid for it. It was at LSU. It was like a several day political program. He was one of the main organizers. Almost all of his speakers, I've gone back to look at this. It was probably 6-7 years ago. They were all Republicans. All of the speakers on the in the whole continuing education program, all day program, they were all Republicans. I don't even know if they have one Democrat there. And so what this is about is making it harder for Louisiana to hire good talent. And what I think Kathy doesn't understand is that any professor can be relinquished of his duties or her duties with cause. And we should be, at least I am, evaluated every single year.
All right, Henry at the Country Club. Henry, you're on with Dane.
Mr. Dane just said, I agree with him wholeheartedly and glad that Mr. Bob is still alive to hear that. Looky here. The January 6th hearing seemed to have shown one thing. Almost everybody except for one guy that was in that room with Trump when he made that phone call has the exact same story. Isn't that telling about what kind of president we used to have and what kind of, almost deity these people here in Louisiana seem to worship? I think we need to rethink our priorities. Thank y'all very much. Have a great weekend.
Well, Donald Trump won our state by 400,000 votes twice, and I have a feeling if he's on the ballot again in 2 years, he'll win it by 400,000 votes again, Dane, despite all this.
Yeah, even in my parish of Tangible Hope, that has the governor as a native son. Trump won last time by just about, I think it was like 19.5 or 20%. Mm-hmm. And he will win Louisiana again, even if he loses the country by a massive landslide. He will win Louisiana, and he will win it by quite a lot.
Thank you, Dane Sherman. Let's keep it going. Always a pleasure. We're segueing now to a fascinating story that's not told much, but it should be told more often. Alan Harrison Berg was one of the first shock jocks. He was a leading talk show host in the great city of Denver. One of his colleagues, Don Nelson, is going to comment about his life and death. But Alan Berg was assassinated 38 years ago tomorrow, 38 years ago, by white supremacists. He was a liberal. He was as talented as Rush Limbaugh, but he was from the left side of the spectrum. And he was featured on 60 Minutes shortly before he died in 1984. Here's how it sounded with Morley Safer's report.
In other words, if you're not a Christian, you're un-American. Is that your point, sir?
That's right.
Good point, sir. You and your redneck, go to bed.
You're listening to Alan Berg on KOA.
Alan Berg on KOA in Denver. Let's get your
Alan Berg, one of Denver's most popular radio call-in hosts, is a reformed alcoholic and lapse trial lawyer. But like his counterparts throughout the country, his most important qualifications are an appetite for anger, an uncontrollable urge to expound on any subject, and the possession of a verbal version of a blunt instrument, usually used shortly after the now familiar words, "Hello, you're on the air."
Well, I just want to ask you something. You're a reborn Christian. You believe in Jesus. Do you think Jesus stopped off, spent 7 hours with Oral Roberts saying, "Let's work out your books. Here's how much you got to raise, Oral, and I got to get on my way"?
No.
And you wonder, okay, what do you think, Oral? Wait a minute. Oral Roberts says to you, "God visited me for 7 hours." Is he psychotic? Is he crazy? Or is he telling the truth?
It's the last neighborhood in town. People don't talk to each other anymore. Talk radio is the last place for them to hear human voices. So many people are isolated today. They don't have a chance to communicate.
But what are the people who listen to radio call-in shows actually hearing? Those who listen to Berg get a mixed bag of mayhem and malarkey, political science and pop psychology, common law and uncommon sense. All of it laced with aggression, abuse, and sarcasm.
Remember when I left you? You never shut up. I got fed up with you. You never let me get a word edgewise. This is my ex-wife. Get out of here. I'm embarrassed. I hate women.
A woman filed a lawsuit against me early in my career. I think it was the second year I was in the business. Her husband had a coronary while he was listening to my show. So she filed suit against me because he became so angry in listening to my show that he felt that I was the causal connection for the death of her husband.
Isn't there something a little dangerous about this kind of broadcasting?
There is a danger. I agree with you. But I think that's the danger that we exhibit in all free, all rights of free expression, be it columnists who write newspapers.
Yeah, indeed. But you say yourself, you often go on there, you don't know quite what you're going to say.
Hopefully my legal training will prevent me from saying the one thing that will kill me. And I've come awfully close.
And shortly thereafter, he was killed. On June 18th, 1984, 9:30 p.m., he returned to his townhouse in Denver after a dinner date with his ex-wife, the one he mentioned, Judith, with whom he was attempting reconciliation, stepped out of his black Volkswagen, and gunfire erupted, with Berg being shot 12 times, mostly in the face. The murder weapon, a semi-automatic, which had been illegally converted to an automatic weapon, was later traced to the Order's members. We'll talk about Alan Berg's legacy with Don Nelson after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're going back in time. It was on this date in 1972, 50 years ago, that Watergate happened, the break-in at the Watergate complex of the Democratic National Committee, led by E. Howard Hunt. And as we know, it caused the resignation of a president. Well, 12 years later, the Republican Party had rebounded nicely. Ronald Reagan was running for re-election, and there was a liberal talk show host in Denver named Alan Berg, who was capturing the fancy of the country because of his ability to communicate to the masses. He was from the left side of the spectrum. He was the focus of the film Talk Radio, done by Oliver Stone in 1988, starring Eric Bogosian. But he was not popular, as you can imagine, with these right-wing nutbags, including this group called The Order, and they shot and killed him. And, of course, it was a hate crime as well. He was Jewish, and because of that, he was singled out and was put on a death list. He had challenged on the air the beliefs of the Christian identity movement that Jews are descended from Satan, as he should have. And one of his colleagues was a guy named Don Nelson at KOA in Denver, one of the biggest stations in America. I used to listen to it when I was a kid in Little Rock. It came through in Little Rock like a local station at times. And Alan Berg was the biggest personality on that station. How well did you know him, Don?
Well, everybody got to know Alan really well because Alan really pushed it in that direction. I was in the sales department, and Alan, after every show, and of course his show was from 1 o'clock until 4 o'clock each afternoon. By the time you got back from calls, and of course this is back in the day, Jim, when you made physical calls on clients. You got in your car and you went out and saw somebody. By the time you got back at 4, 4:30 in the afternoon, he's waiting in the sales office for all of the salespeople to return. And the reason is, one, he liked the companionship and he loved to perform. But back in those days, and I guess even today, talent's compensation comes from live endorsements of businesses. So he's there hustling business from us, and he would come up to my cubicle and he would say, "Nelson, you haven't done anything for me recently. When are we going to go on a call? And come on, there's got to be some business out there I can be talking about." And that's what I mean by pushing his personality, really.
So he went on calls with you.
Oh, one in particular. Alan said to me, "What are we going to do? Are you going to come up with some place that we can go and work for a live endorsement?" And I said, "I have a place, and it's called Michael's Floor Covering over right behind the old Mile High Stadium." I said, "I'll set up the appointment. We'll go tomorrow before your show." Alan shows up the next morning. Alan always dressed in wild clothing, as you can imagine. Let me give you a description of the way I remember it that morning. He had brown and white saddle shoes on. He had then long socks pulled up.
Right.
He had like knickers on then that met the sock. He had a tie on with a wild shirt and then some kind of a vest. And Alan wasn't the most attractive person on this planet to begin with. And then the way he dressed, I guess, complimented his personality, but it wouldn't have been the combination that most people would have put together. He shows up. He's got his MG convertible pulled in front of the station. And he said, "Let's go. I'm driving." And I said, "Like hell you are. There's no way I'm getting in a car with you, a convertible, and going on a sales call. I mean, we're all going to check out at one point or another, but I don't want to go that way." And he had been on the air ranting and raving and carrying on and upsetting a lot of these right-wing white supremacy groups. So we got in my car, went to the business. The man who owned the business claimed he was a Vietnam veteran, and he was in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
The minute Alan steps in the store and I introduce him to Michael, Berg grabs his wheelchair from behind and starts wheeling him around the store. And he keeps saying, "Stop, stop, please stop." And Alan is wheeling him very rapidly around the store.
Did you get the sale?
Yes. Not only did we get the sale, for a year. It was an annual contract. Mm-hmm.
Well, he had some close calls before they finished him off, including one on the air, didn't he?
He certainly did. Again, coming back from making sales calls all day, it was about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I get stopped by the Denver police about three or four blocks prior to the radio station. And I asked the officer, "What's up?" And he said, "Well, there's a crazy guy in the studio with Alan Berg and threatening to blow his brains out." He said, "Haven't you been listening to your own radio station?" Which I hadn't. And so I went and found another parking spot. Of course, you could not get in the station. SWAT team from Denver, FBI, you name it, in law enforcement was there, and inside the studio was the head of the KKK of Colorado with a, and I don't remember exactly what the revolver was, but a revolver at Alan Berg's head. And Alan's on the air. I flipped on the radio before I got out of my car, obviously. And I hear him ranting and raving, and he said, "You haven't got any courage whatsoever if you don't blow my brains out on 50,000 watts. It'll go all over the Rocky Mountain West." And he kept tempting this guy to pull the trigger. Well, the Denver Police Department finally was able to capture this man, and Berg was safe at that point. But that's the kind of guy Alan was. Anything for notoriety.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was 1984 when he was killed. And it was just at this time that an unknown jock named Jeff Christie, whose real name was Rush Limbaugh, was hired in Sacramento to replace Morton Downey Jr. And the rest, as we know, is history. And Limbaugh has, and when he was with us, he acknowledged that he copied a lot of people, and the bombastic tone that he had from the right was very similar to Alan Berg's from the left. And it is ironic that when Alan Berg finally met his maker, a lot of the callers who called in were crying, and these were people who had attacked him on the air. And a young guy at that time, who later became a pretty big show host himself, Ken Hamblin, had to go on the air that night and tell his audience that Alan Berg had been assassinated. And here's how it sounded on June 18th, 1984, KOA Denver, Ken Hamblin commenting on the passing of Alan Berg.
10:39 KOA time, and I'm still trying to piece information together. Off the air, I'm finding out that Channel 7 has issued a report that said the best investigative efforts of the DPD has indicated that someone passing in a vehicle using a semi-automatic weapon or an automatic weapon, I'm not sure which, fired upon Alan Berg when he was exiting his vehicle in front of his home. 10 or more shell casings, to the best of my ability, or a number that would indicate an automatic weapon was found at the scene. And Alan Berg has, in fact, passed on. He is no longer with us. He'll always be with us, though. I think he's touched each and every one of us. He touched me. And Lee Larson and Jim Hawthorne are on their way into the station now. Jim is program director. Lee Larson is the station manager. And it's a shock. To describe how I feel right now, I've got a high-pitched ringing sound in my ears. My head is throbbing. And I can't believe it. I can't believe the degree in my classically liberal heart, the degree of hatred, the degree of venomous hatred that we feed and we nourish and we water. We make sure it gets enough sunlight. We harvest it, package it, and we hide it away for stormy days so that we'll always have enough hatred to munch on. Alan Berg was a purveyor of words. Alan Berg was a purveyor of ideas. You can't kill words and you can't kill ideas. Funny thing, Alan always, you know, it's funny. I tell you, we used to sit down at lunch, and Alan always used to say, they're out there, but you can't worry about them. They're out there. You can't worry about them. You never know, you know. You never know where the nuts are going to come from, is what he used to say. So you live from day to day. Everybody's at the scene right now, and as soon as we can get an update on what has occurred, we'll pass it along to you.
And we'll be back after this brief timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We're in the final quarter hour. Robin Dow producing, your number 877-217-5757. In a moment, we'll get a wrap-up of what's going on with the redistricting session from Paul Braun, who covers the Capitol for WRKF and WWNO. But Don Nelson has been gracious enough to come by. He's a guy who's been in radio for over a half century. And in the early 80s, he was in Denver, Colorado at KOA. And the biggest talk show host in the country then was arguably Alan Berg, host 1-4 on KOA, who was assassinated 38 years ago tomorrow, June 18th, 1984. Four members of the order were indicted on federal charges. Only two were convicted. And Berg's death was portrayed in the 1988 film Betrayed, as well as Oliver Stone's 1988 film adaptation of Eric Bogosian's play Talk Radio. And if he had been around, he was 50 years old, a young man by radio standards, he probably would have been a nationally syndicated guy, and that mantle was taken up by one Rush Hudson Limbaugh III a few years later in 1988. But at the time in 1984, Rush Limbaugh wasn't even a talk show host, and Alan Berg had just been featured on 60 Minutes. And the hate that's out there is still there. We know that. And this could happen to anybody in public life, but Alan Berg seemed to know it was coming, Don.
He did. He would constantly talk about it. And, of course, those of us who worked with him would bring it up quite regularly because of his program and his antagonistic nature. So we would comment about it, and he would kind of do that Berg giggle and say really what was said on Ken Hamlin's show, which is they're out there, and that was pretty much his comment.
You had left the station by the time he died. Where were you? Do you remember when you found out?
I had, I had no idea that it had occurred the night before. There was a tabloid newspaper in existence in Denver at that point, the Rocky Mountain News. I took the Rocky Mountain News. I went out to get my paper first thing in the morning, and on the front page of the Rocky Mountain News, there's Alan Berg's body covered by a sheet. And, of course, headlines, Alan Berg murdered.
What do you think his legacy is?
Well, you summed it up very well at the very beginning of the program. He was one of the first different talk show hosts. He may not have been the first, but he was in that group where it wasn't just another person on the radio. It was somebody that had done their homework, had done a lot of research into things, and had very strong opinions about things. Prior to that, you really didn't hear that in talk radio. You just heard what the story was, and somebody gave it, and that was the version of talk radio at that point.
And he is probably one of the last to voices from the left, because after him, there were many imitators.
Right.
But they were all from the right side of the spectrum.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely,
he gave his life for his beliefs, and any man who does that is a brave man.
No question.
Thank you, Doug.
Absolutely.
And we're joined now for a few moments by one Paul Braun, who's been covering the Capitol, and now the Capitol has extended to the federal courthouse in Baton Rouge downtown, where Judge Shelley Dick yesterday rejected a request by legislative leaders from the Republican side of the spectrum, Clay Scheck-Snyder, Paige Cortez, to extend a deadline for a new congressional map, and singled out the House of Representatives for criticism because of the fact that the House is basically at this point defying the judge's order to redraw what is according to the law in the view of Judge Dick, who's an erudite legal mind, illegal against the Voting Rights Act. So, Paul, where are we?
Well, we're still dealing with a lot of bills in committee. I mean, the ruling yesterday from Judge Dick not to grant that extension requested by the GOP legislative leaders was a pretty big deal. And we've still got this legal process hanging over all the proceedings at the Capitol for sure. But it was interesting to hear, you know, Judge Dick admonish the speaker in particular for the House of Representatives' approach to redistricting. The speaker himself filed a congressional redistricting proposal. It was identical to the one that Dick struck down just a few weeks ago. And, you know, Dick brought up that, asked why she shouldn't hold him in contempt for doing so. So it was a very tense hearing and some very strong words from the bench. And I think that's going to maybe color this proceeding moving forward. That said, I don't know whether or not the speaker is going to go through the motions of giving all this stuff a fair hearing. I don't think that the GOP legislature is all that interested in passing a map that would meet Judge Dick's requirements, which would have two majority black congressional districts.
Well, the judge, Shelley Dick, branded the House's actions as disingenuous and sincere. She noted in 1994 the legislature approved a new congressional map in 6 days. And she says if lawmakers don't meet the Monday 6 o'clock deadline, she'll draw the map herself. And in another tense gathering, as reported in front page of The Advocate today, a Senate panel voted 6-3, delaying action until today on a bill by Senator Cleo Fields to add a second majority black congressional district. What do you think about what ultimately the lawmakers will do?
I mean, I think, and what we heard from Senator Fields yesterday and some others is a concern that the folks in charge of this, the GOP, are slow walking the proposals. We've got until Monday at 6 p.m. to get this done. And there's all these levers that you have to pull and these processes you have to go through in the legislature. And just delaying it by that one day makes the timelines difficult without suspending the rules. So you may see, the judge got Senate President Paige Cortez to commit to at least trying to do what he can to get through some of those processes in time. But we're really fighting the clock here. It's a holiday weekend. You've got a lot of lawmakers who are not pleased that they were called back after concluding their, you know, 3-month regular session. And they're really not keen on passing these maps to begin with. So it's going to be interesting for sure, but I'm not sure that we'll get a much different result. And I think this is ultimately going to end up in the courts.
A listener notes that Senator Rick Ward, Republican from Port Allen, who has announced he's leaving the legislature, I think it was last night, he filed a bill that would create a second majority minority district, make sweeping changes in the others. They have a lot of choices that are possible. And of course, they also have the choice to keep things the way they are and just defy the judge. And it is going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. And there are other courts that, of course, will be called upon to judge on this. But in Louisiana, this is one time, Paul, where we have an advantage in that we have an open primary. We're not up against the clock the way they were in Alabama. There is ample time to do this.
Right. I mean, qualifying begins in July. Some of the folks I've been hearing from, some of the attorneys who are arguing for the plaintiffs in this case, they're looking at sort of like August is when they see is a deadline for this, a practical deadline in which the courts, they'd expect to intervene and really just say, hey, we're going to put a pause on all of this. Just use the maps you've got through this cycle. And we'll let a higher court address this issue after we've had the midterm elections, which is exactly the case that we've seen in Alabama.
Well, Cleo Fields had his district thrown out by the courts. He was in Congress for a while, and he had a district that sprawled in every major metro in the state except New Orleans, went from Shreveport to Monroe to Alexandria to Lake Charles to Lafayette to Baton Rouge. And ultimately, it was thrown out, and it cost him a seat in Congress. Somebody stands to lose here if they end up having a second minority district, and it most likely will be either Julia Letlow or Garrett Graves. Any thoughts about who is most likely to end up without a congressional seat?
Pretty much all the maps that we've seen would turn that fifth congressional district, Julia Letlow's district, into a second majority minority district. They would scoop up some black voters from North Baton Rouge, stretch up to Monroe, Alexandria as well. Some versions reach all the way into Lafayette to extend those borders and to get the amount of population that you need for a majority black voting age population in that district. That seems to be the most common thing. Julia Letlow is the newest member of our congressional delegation, and there's still a pretty strong contingent arguing to keep that fifth district as it is and to advocate for rural voters in particular. But it seems if it were to happen, that would be the mechanism, would be to change the fifth district.
Well, Democrats say the legislature is duty bound to comply with a court order from Judge Dick. MIFT Republicans say the debate should be settled by the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals and the U.S. Supreme Court, and it may very well end up at the U.S. Supreme Court.
It very well may. I mean, we went into the one-month redistricting session that we had back in February, and everyone there, you know, for all the effort that was put in, all the argument, all the votes that were held, pretty much everybody agreed that this was going to end up in the courts one way or another. And we're seeing that play out now, and it's likely we won't see a final decision on this, either from the legislature or the courts, for quite a while.
Thank you, Paul Braun. Thank you for listening. Happy Juneteenth. Back Monday. Signature support from Jerry Lane Chevrolet and First Financial Tax and Accounting Services.